welcome to the Family Alpha Podcast, a place where information is exchanged with the expectation that it is to be applied. I am your host, Hunter Drew, founder of thefamilyalpha.com, as well as co-founder of thefraternityofexcellence.com. Now let's dive into a discussion that can help you help yourself. Again, this is the Family Alpha Podcast. Now let's get to work. Here we go. Welcome to another episode of The Morning Brew with Hunter Drew. Today I'm joined by longtime friend, when you look at the internet age, Justin Campbell. Justin, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Hunter.
I say longtime friend because we met in 2017. It was the 2017-21 convention, correct?
Yes. Do you remember the context? Do you remember the context of where we first met?
Was it at the bar?
It was at the bar, correct.
Yes. Our first moment. Is that gay? Let's just immediately dive into that. Okay. I was like, hey, what's up? And you're like, hey. And then hey. I think it just went from there. And I was like, who is this guy?
Yeah. It's funny because I was having dinner with a clinical psychologist the other night, and I was just telling her about, you know, like my life and what was going on. And she was like, oh my God, this is so interesting. Wow. She's like, have you ever been diagnosed with Asperger's? And I was like, what the fuck? Like, where is this coming from? So I think, you know, especially like going to the convention, that was really the first time that I felt like I was really honestly putting myself out there. And I wanted to meet some new people. Like, I've always been a lone wolf. I've always kind of operated my life and my family and my business completely independently. And I really went into it with just this idea of being open and trying to meet people that I could connect with. And I found you. So
you definitely swung the entire other way. Like, if you're a more solitary individual, I mean, that's what like immediately blew my mind, is I was just like lost. It was my first convention. It was my first time going live. I had no idea like what this whole online thing was. Like, literally, that was the first time I did anything outside of like my Jeep or, you know, my house. Yeah. And now I'm with all these guys and I'm like, hey, what's up? And you're just like, just open, like totally receptive to like everything. You're like, hey, what's going on, man? So what do you think about this? And I'm like, what? Who are you? Like, I don't know you, but you were talking like we'd known each other forever. And I was like, cool. And it like accelerated the friendship because we skipped the whole formalities and dove right into like, you know, what's your opinion on like fatherhood on this, or, you know, marriage on that? Or like, if you had a foursome, but a dude happened to jump in and jump out, is that gay? I'm like, what? What are you talking about?
Yeah.
And then here we are.
Yeah, it was, it was funny because I have always been, I'm good at reading people, you know, so it's something that I think there's probably 10 or 15 of us that night, you know, sitting around having a conversation, having some cocktails around the bar. And I just remember like the next morning you were like, dude, what time do you speak? And I'm like, I'm not a speaker. Like, I just came here to check this shit out. You're a speaker? Oh my God. I didn't realize I was at the speaker's dinner party last night. My bad. You know, it's holy crap. So. I do remember, when you took the stage, I was like, where is he going to go with this? Like,
what's this guy talking about?
What is this?
He's
like
saying, fuck,
this is going to be interesting. And you know, you had, and I think that was probably, I liked your genuineness that I felt, you know, like in the conversation we had. I think it was like Brian and, I guess, you know, all the guys that were there, but, you just seemed genuine. I think especially when, talking with other guys who are fathers, that's my wheelhouse. Like, that's my space. That's where I feel the most confident. Being a dad is really probably my greatest accomplishment in life, is that one thing. And just like hearing you trying to like whip your family into shape and try to do something positive and trying to be a positive masculine role model, honestly, Hunter, I was inspired. So
now, what's wild about that is, you know, you are a family man, you have kids, you also have a grandkid. Two. So I saw the photo of the one.
Yeah. So I have,
go ahead.
I have, 3 years ago, I had my first grandson. I call him Loam. That's sort of his, internet name. And he is just like me. I mean, it is so endearing having a, Like, you can't, don't take your eyes off of him for 1 second, right? I mean, he even runs, like, he runs the best game in the world. He'll go over here and he'll get something started over here, right? And he'll draw your attention and then he'll run out the front door. So I have Loam, he's 3 years old. And then last September, I had my second grandchild and her name is Ayla. And to me, that had a lot of special meaning. I don't know if you're a big book guy. I am. Maybe some of your viewers are big book fans. But early in life, I think probably about 14 years old, I ended up in a correctional facility. And I was there for about 6 months. And I had already tested out. So part of the process is they test to see where you are academically. And I tested out. So they said, well, we're gonna have you take your GED. You'll be 15 while you're here, and you can go ahead and take your GED, and then we can get that out of the way for you. And they put me in this classroom with this crazy cat lady. Today we would call her a feminist, but at the time that really wasn't a word. She was an incredibly amazing woman with a lot of depth and a lot of perception about, like, how to make people feel comfortable. And in that 6 months I spent in her classroom, she had built like these little tiny cubbies and you could like pull the curtain over and I'd go in there. And she gave me a book called The Clan of the Cave Bear. And I would have to say that that book right there set up my idealization with what my ideal woman looked like, at least in my idealization in my head. And the character in that story, her name is Ayla. So my daughter, she didn't necessarily, she liked the name. And then I think she saw it as a positive that I had also felt such a strong pull to this book, to Clan of the Cave Bear and this character, Ayla. So we've got Ayla, that's my 1-year-old. And I just found out this week that my 20-year-old son is having a baby. So I'm about to, assuming everything goes through, that'll be 3 grandkids by the time I'm 43 years old.
Dude, that is awesome. And it's cool to see the clan grow. Like, I know it's crazy. I mean, but like for everything that you see online, you know, oh, wait till you're an established 35-year-old man. I didn't do that. You didn't do that.
Yeah.
You know, and our family is doing great. So we're not going to make this show about when to have kids and that, but I will say, you know, when the kid's there, you do your job, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, they have,
regardless
they
of have, age,
they just show up, you know, it's like, I think
there's a step in the process and I love the step of making babies. So there is a gap somewhere that bridges that.
Yeah. It was funny. It's cause I don't, do you swear on your show?
I do. And okay, we already have, okay. So we're good.
Okay. Okay. So my daughter was like, I'm pregnant. And I was like, what? I thought we talked about this. She's like, well, Dad, I don't know how it happened. I was like, Mariah, you cannot, the pussy cannot drip dry, right? You can't drip dry the pussy, bro. Or, you know, it just doesn't work that way. Okay.
I don't know how it happened. Like, I do. I wasn't there, but I do know how it happened. It's like a very specific way it happened. I can tell you that. That's really cool. And yeah, it's good to see, you know, the clan grow. And, you know, like some of the guys in the chat have said, congratulations. They're hoping everybody's happy and healthy and everything works out. My sister just had a baby too. And I shared a whole little thread on Twitter, but, you know, it got a little crazy there and then everything worked out. And now I get to hold like this ball of meat that is like so tiny. I'm like, man, you're going to grow into like a man. And like
50 pounds.
Dude, it's going to be like a real man.
Yeah. It's crazy because when I kind of look at my kids that way, I'll be like, I have a little over 370 pounds of flesh right now that I've started, you know, like living, breathing DNA tissue that is part of my stream. That, and my daughter, when we were talking about my middle son having a baby, and she's like, are you happy for him? And I was like, in a Darwinian sense, yeah, I'm happy. But in reality, I wish he would have matured a little bit more. But it is what it is at this point. So,
well, that's exactly it. What's the alternative? You sit there and like the kid's coming either way. You might as well smile. No. You know, that's great.
Might as well try to enjoy it. And I will, absolutely. So
now going back a little bit before we got on this baby talk, you were talking about being the lone wolf, going through having the chip on the shoulder, going through coming up, and it was just you, and you're gonna take care of you, you're gonna make it happen. You know, you're a man, and you can, it was you taking on, whatever came your way. One of the reasons that you and I have stayed so connected is your decision to open that up. Like I said, when we first met, I felt like I knew you and just didn't remember your name. Like, oh, I had to have talked to this dude. And since then, you shared a few moments you had, hunting with your son, which I was like, that is the coolest thing in the world. I hopped in your Facebook and kind of like scanned a little to see what you've been up to. And like, it's wicked cool to see all that. But also, and people don't see this because I've never really shared with the world, because it's between you and I, but you helped me immensely without any, you didn't ask anything in return. So a lot of our commutes, or not our commutes, my commutes home, we would talk about, and it'd be at random. Like, we'd not talk for a month, and then a whole hour long commute home. Hey, did you ever think about doing this? One of the reasons I have Facebook now is because we were talking about ways that I could reach men and tell my story differently. Instead of just doing 200 characters, go out, like actually find and start building an ongoing story that I can do. You helped me with some lighting, some audio. This happened because of a lot of the advice you'd given me to make myself look like a professional. What I know you talked about the, sitting down and having the dinner recently, but when did you really make that decision? Or how did you get to the point where you're like, I'm going to unabashedly, unselfishly just give. And, maybe something good comes in return, but I'm just going to give without thought, because that's a very selfless act. You could have charged me for that, for the information you gave, the coaching you gave. That's fucking money that people are charging big dollars. And you're like, nah, you're a photographer. You've done many jobs, and you along the way fell into all these holes that you had to fix. And you saved me from falling into those holes by saying, don't do this, do that. Don't do this, do that. So how did you get to that point? Because I think a lot of men, there are some doing it, but we need more. And I'm wondering how do we get to that? How do we even talk about this?
I mean, it's a great question. It's something that I think going through like my mid 30s, I did a ton of reading, and one of the books, I don't have the name. I just remember it was Carl Jung, and he kind of went into this idea of having a greater purpose going into the second half of your life. And like the first half of your life, you raise a family, you take care of business, and then the second half of your life becomes culture. And I think like understanding how altruism works and realizing that the greatest benefits that I get in my life, even though I wouldn't say I'm naturally inclined to altruism, but I definitely get, there's some reward there for me that I don't really fully understand, because I really am an incredibly selfish person. But yet, like you said, I feel like I want to help people who are open or receptive to it. And I think some of it is definitely if I can relate to the person, like you being a father. I feel like I went through all these pitfalls, and I do, if somebody's interested in learning how to avoid them, I take a lot of pride in being able to offer that advice to people, because what good is all that advice to me? What do I do with all this shit up here, right? Like, you can't just take a drill and just drill into my head and like pull it all out, So it's like I've learned and I've trained myself to try to help people without asking for anything back. And honestly, it's brought a lot of meaning to my life. So, and I do, I'm really glad I've been able to help you, Hunter. And I will tell you, it means a lot to hear you say that, because sometimes, like the first thing I said about the lady telling me I have Asperger's, sometimes I take shit too far, right? Like your Facebook feed this week, right? With your messages every day you wake up and it's like, you get like 50 messages with pictures and everything. And I'm trying to help you lay it out. And there's a part of me that's like, I'm probably just annoying this guy.
I'm sitting there. So I'm looking at, and this is the thing people don't see. They're like, things just happen. Things don't just happen. When you surround yourself with people who are willing to help you, it helps you help yourself so much. And one of the things that I will do is do the work. So you're sending me these screenshots of how I could get the links to show up. So I'm looking on my phone at like the picture, and then I'm on my computer trying to like find the same like window. I'm like, oh, that's what he's talking about.
Yeah.
Now it makes sense. So no, not annoying at all. You know, I just disregard the things that I'm like, that doesn't matter. That doesn't matter. I need that.
That doesn't matter. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, finding like that gem in there. But I think that's cool. And I think that kind of plays to, you know, people talking about making money. They're like, what are you gonna do? Take it to the grave. So a lot of people who just give, they're like, hey, let me help you. They're like, why do you help people? Or, you know, people who are leading charities and things like that. They're like, what am I going to do with it? It's kind of like, it's your knowledge. That's your currency that you're giving out. Like, what do I do? Hold this to myself because I don't want anybody in the competitive market. Man, the fucking market's not saturated. Share, help somebody, you know, especially when it's somebody, again, like you said, you can relate to. And I think that's pretty cool.
And especially, you know, like being a father, like I naturally am predisposed to kind of assume this fatherly role with people. And I try to do it without being condescending. I try to be very conscious about that unsolicited advice and just really trying to focus on what is it that this person can benefit from. And like I told you right from the beginning, I think we had this talk in January. I think it was the first time you had tried jumping onto Facebook professionally. And I was like, man, you can crush it on Facebook, Hunter. Like, you could seriously crush it over here. There's a huge gap that could be filled. I mean, even the show, you can cast this show right onto Facebook. You could set up a feed over there. You could cast this show over there, and you could build an amazing audience. It's a little bit different dynamic than what you have at YouTube. You know, YouTube's kind of got its own thing. And that's something else we've talked about, is like, be native to the platform. Just like that was the same advice that I gave you in January, was be native to yourself. You know, like this, like I know that the red pill was something that had gotten you, you wrote about it, you were invested in it, you took a lot of the knowledge that was available. It's kind of like guys sharing their notes, and you really invested in it. But I think, you know, that what I basically, when I looked at it, I was like, yes, red pill knowledge is incredibly helpful and useful, but you're a dad. Like, you're a husband, you know, like, you want to be a community leader. Like, that's what you are. You know what I'm saying? You're not the red pill. You are a father. And that's the quality. And that's what something that I felt like if you leaned into that, you would be, I mean, you could have whatever success you wanted to with that. So.
No, I appreciate it. And again, when people that have clearly proven their mettle, I guess, when they speak, you listen. And it's funny, you know, you try not to be condescending, you know, you deliver it. There are definitely times you're like, look, unfuck yourself. Stop doing that. And it always reminds me of, so there's a guy named Phil and a man named Tex who are kind of mentors of mine that I kind of ping things off of. And they're the same way. Like, sometimes like, all right, hey, try this. And sometimes they're just like, hey, Hunter, pull your head out of your ass. I'm like,
yeah.
Thanks, boss.
Yeah.
Got it. You know,
shut up.
Like, the outside looking in, you can fix. Like, me with somebody else, I'm like, hey, why are you doing it this way? They're like, I don't know. I didn't even realize I was doing it that way. And then they can like get that outside perspective and kind of shift their ways.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I think this probably, that's a talent, to be able to utilize the right information at the right time.
I agree.
You know, as opposed to like, you know, like when I started my business and I was trying to come up in the world, you know, I had my first child when I was born in 1996. What were you doing? So you would, I mean, what are you?
96? I was 9. Yeah,
you were 9. So there wasn't an internet, you know, like I didn't have a cell phone. I had a beeper. I remember going to the Maplewood Mall and buying a beeper for like $49. And I got like a special case for it. And I had a little chain and it clipped onto my pants. And now it's like, what the fuck are you going to do with a beeper? Like, what did we do? Right? Like, we had like little codes and shit that we would send. Like, you know, you could flip the numbers around and make words. I mean, but it's so drastically different today, where I feel like I kind of look at it like this: is half of my life on this planet, I've had access to the internet. Where for you, you're about, I'd say almost what, 2/3 of your life, roughly, you've had access to the internet.
Yeah, that's fair. I think it was around middle school, we got that AOL CD. So that was probably, yeah, exactly. You're late at night trying to make it like not sound off, your parents don't hear you. But yeah, I would say, yeah, 2/3 of my life.
So that's kind of the interesting perspective where I kind of look at people at this point right now is, especially like my daughter, she's had access to the internet her entire life. And, you know, so then there's you, there's a two-thirder, there's a me who's a halfer, there's people who are quarters, you know, I guess Texas Dom, he may be a fifther. What do you think?
I think he's 56.
Yeah, so he's, you know, about 20 years roughly. Yeah, so he was, you know, in his late 30s, you know, when the internet became a thing. I mean, you become a completely different person as you access the internet. And I'll be interested to see where, honestly, where this takes humanity. I don't see it as all entirely positive. Having this readily access information, I don't know that it's the best thing for us, but it's here and it's changing us. I don't know what that looks like, but it's something that I honestly try to be aware of. So
I recently had this exact discussion, and that's wild. So you know that lady, and there's two lines of thought. I'm not going to go down the political line of this at all, but there's two examples I wanted to bring up. Both have to do with politics, but I want to focus on the actions, not the politics. So the first one was, this kid had a MAGA hat on. He went into the Foot Locker and the guy started like, yeah, talking a lot of shit, started swearing at this kid. And we're talking like a teenage, like a young teen. So let's say 13 years old, young boy, I wouldn't even call him like Peach Fuzz yet. And then this adult man is like yelling in this kid's face. I don't know if he hit the hat off his head. I don't know if he crossed that physical line of physical confrontation, but he started screaming at him. And I wrote a piece on it. After I saw that, I was like, this guy is probably on a forum somewhere saying all these things and he can get away with it. And like it stayed in his head. So in the real world, he started doing it again, not realizing you're not in the forum anymore. And I was like, are the electronic expressions now kind of seeping into your brain? And like, that's now who you are, thinking you're a man who can say and do whatever you want. So you're screaming at a kid, or are you just a fucking asshole? But I feel like having that 24/7 ability to say and do what you want without any accountability is seeping into the real world. And the other one was that woman who screamed at that other woman, I hope you're held down and raped, because she was talking to the pro-lifers and whatnot. And I was like, how the fuck can a woman say that to a woman? Like, that is the most demonic shit. Like, you're either really fucked up or you're living in a world where you can say anything you want online and do anything you want online without any accountability. And again, you're in the real world and you're like, I'm just going to say this. Like, did you not think at any point when you're saying to another woman, I hope you're held down a rape, that you probably shouldn't say that while being filmed in front of a group and as a human being, you know? It just made me sick to my stomach. And I'm wondering, is that because of exactly that, the electronic world we live in?
Yeah, I think there is a direct connection to the level of narcissism that we're seeing in people's behavior. And they just don't have the presence to understand that her saying that because of your ideology, which this really is an ideology, and we are all entitled to our own ideology. Like, you can believe whatever you want, right? It's when those lines intersect with other people's lives that it stops being an ideology and it starts becoming dangerous. When, like, so if I said, if I told my daughter walking out of the house this morning, and this happened, I think probably she was 14 or 15, and she was provocative and her boobs are hanging out. If I told her, if you wear that, there you could get raped, right? That's a negative, because somebody else would say, oh, well, it doesn't matter what she wears. Like, she should be able to be whoever she wants to be, right? But suddenly, if you disagree with this person, then it's okay to be raped. I mean, how fucked up do you have to be to wish rape on somebody outside of actually being a rapist?
Dude, it's like, I have a wife and daughter, and like you, I mean, as well, like the women in your life, I can't, it's like that primal, like, anger starts to build up. Cause you're like, are we really having this discussion? Are we really at the point where we can talk about how women are wishing this on other women? Like, I love America. I love this country. I'm a self-proclaimed nationalist. I love my country, but I don't argue with AJ Cortez and a few of the other guys recently when they were like, there's something wrong with this country. Like, we got some weird things going on, because we do. And it's like, hey, whether you want to stay fixed, go do your thing. Like, I don't care. The fact is, something has to change, or this is going to grow and grow and grow until, you know, it ignites
a breaking point. Well, you know, I was thinking about this because, you know, it's something, you know, it was a topic. It was something, you know, a conversation piece at the convention. And I tried to think about it. I spent a little bit of time trying to think, like, what does it mean? And it's as men, we have always faced adversity. There's always been something there that creates the friction that we have to push up against. And for us, like, we don't have to worry about King George running Sir Lancelot in and lopping our heads off. If all I have to worry about is feminism, I got it pretty good, you know? If that's the level of adversity that we have to come up against, is this whole sort of like socialist ideas and like we got a pool and just like, if that's all I have to deal with in my lifetime, I feel like I'm doing pretty damn good. So, and I agree with you. I love America too. So,
you know, that's the flip side. So we are living in literally the most comfortable time ever.
Yeah.
like to feel pain, like right now, like my shoulder's killing me because yeah. I like literally had to send myself to the gym. Like not because I was out tilling the land because, you know, my kids wouldn't eat if I didn't till it, or because I had to like fix my livestock. It's like, no, I went to the gym.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sitting here right now. I have a smorgasbord. I have ice water. I have coffee. I have a Sprite. I have some cashews. You know, it's like I have it really, really freaking good. And I think it's probably a good time to tie into what your speech was about, was discomfort. And that one key word influenced me. It changed my path in the last 12 months. I went to the convention. I went to the 21 convention 2 years in a row. Last year, your speech you gave on alcohol, like you had made a decision to whatever it was. I don't really. You were just questioning your relationship with alcohol. And so I was at the convention for a week. I flew into Orlando early. And then Monday morning I got onto a shuttle and I went to Miami Beach and I lived in a hostel for a week. When I got to that hostel, I was just about dead because I had drank almost $1,000 in alcohol at the convention. Like I had Sunday morning, I didn't get up until noon because I was puking. I was throwing up. I was sick. And so Monday I get to Miami Beach and I walk into my hostel. And I'm just like, I had all this time on the shuttle and I was like doing my budget and looking at it. And I'm like, holy fuck, man, if I quit drinking, I could stay here for a month on the money that I'm spending. And I'm like, I'm done. Like maybe there's a sign from God or something, but I think this is it. And I walked into my room I walked into my hostel room and there was probably 12 beds in there. And I walk in and there was a Swedish cheerleading team.
Holy shit.
Yeah. I'm like, okay, this is the fucking sign, man. Like, this is a legit sign. They're like, hello, hello. I can't do Swedish accents very good. So
that was pretty good. I thought you were Swedish for a second.
And they're like, would you like to come to the beach with us today? And I'm like, I can't. Thank you, ladies. I appreciate it. I laid down and I slept for about 24 hours. And I woke up the next morning. And I broke up with alcohol for a period of time. I wrote this long piece. It's on Facebook. It's in there from about October of last year. And I broke up with alcohol and I basically leaned into my creativity. I wanted to understand what I could do with it, what I could access with it. So I had spent the entire winter just creating. That's all I was going to do. I made series after series. I shot and filmed relentlessly every day, getting up, making videos. And by February, I was completely fucking depressed, man. Like it was like the world was collapsing. I live in Minnesota, you know, so it really does kind of collapse. It gets darker and darker and darker and you don't get enough light. And I was like, I was taking my son to school one day and he's like, and I love my son, my youngest son. He's an amazing young man. He's like, Dad, you're basically an internet troll. And I'm like, he's like, when I grow up, I'm not going to be like you. I'm going to get a real job and I'm going to go to work every day. And I'm just like, it was so impactful because.
Dude, that's coming from that, like a babe's mouth, you know, the truth. You're like,
right, what do you do? Do I hit him? Like, shut the hell up. Don't talk to me like that, you little bastard.
Don't make me feel.
Don't talk about my
life choices.
Yeah. So I made a conscious decision to take what I had developed with my creativity and I felt like it really wasn't going anywhere. I wasn't getting the growth that I wanted. It wasn't getting any better. And I was like, I'm going to put myself into discomfort. I'm going to do something that I haven't done in 20 years roughly now. And I got back into construction. And the main reason why I did it was because I knew, like, deep down inside that building things really brings me a huge fucking sense of pride. You know, it's like at the end of the day, when I leave and I've built something or I've made something, I feel fucking amazing. You know, like I feel like a man again. And, you know, it's like my muscles get all ripped and I'm leaving and I'm all masculine and I feel amazing. And there, and then the struggle, the physical struggle that I have to go up against is where my creativity resides. It's like a cheese grater, man. Like if you want creativity, you can't just like sit there and look at the wall. You have to get out some form of discomfort and grind it and grind and grind and grind. And inside of that process, that's where I found my true creativity actually resides.
So aligning that grind with that passion is something that I've been talking to a lot of guys about. He's kind of bringing like, all right, I love to do this, but I need to do this. This is what my soul is like. All right, now how can you bring those together? And I'm going to see if this works. But I wanted to share something I saw of yours that I thought was really fucking cool. So this video, you know,
did you watch that? What did you think?
Dude, so I think everybody can see this plan. Being able, you're a photographer, you have that eye, you have that artistic ability, but you're also into construction.
Yeah.
So being able to, so I can see you building things and doing things like that, but also appreciating the things built. So how can you bring an eye to what has been built? You know, how can you build a world, build an image that people wouldn't normally see? Like, look at this. If I were a realtor selling this house, and for you to drop down and like, look at your home, this could be yours, you know, all these things, you know, like, whoa, you know, like, look at the shots, look at the angles, look at the community, look at the neighborhood. People don't see this, but the photographer can. So the man who understands how to build, like, so that, let's say that roof is tarped, you know, the man who's building the roof, even if they were just doing construction, you could go in and be like, look at it from this angle, you know, start the work here. Look at what you could do there. Look at, you know, the pristine condition of all this stuff. It's art. It's construction. It's building. It's purpose. Uh-huh. It's the grind. It's the flow. It's the rigid rock as well as the water that's going around it. You combined those in this. So when I watched this, I was like, holy fuck, I get this guy. It's like I kind of like peered a little bit into who Justin is, you know? And I thought that was really, really cool. So I wanted, and I think StreamYard's awesome being able to do this.
Did you watch the whole thing?
I scrolled through this, yes.
Okay, so this, we actually built these chimneys here. So those caps on top, there's me right there.
I like the photo of your shirt that says, keep calm, I'm just getting high or something. But it's like, you're sleeping on that thing.
Yeah, it's like it's an aerial shot going down. So that right there, what you're looking at is, it's 32 feet in the air. And so on any given day, on this one, I climb it anywhere from about 100, 125 times roughly. And I tell you what, like nothing makes me freaking hornier in the world than having all of that, like climbing all, like using your legs to climb up each one of those little ramps is like, it has absolutely fundamentally changed me. And it's allowed me to sort of make this, you know, the content that you see there. So.
You know, and to look at that though, you know, there are other men who are like really passionate about certain things, but maybe they're stuck in a job. Maybe they love their job. They're like, I don't want to leave my job, but I do love doing that thing. Sculpting, you know, video content, maybe blogging, writing. You know, there's a way to combine those. There's a way to make those. You don't have to crush or hold down or repress a part of your soul to have another one grow. You can have both. You just got to find the proper way to intertwine the tangible and intangible aspects of who you are as a man.
Yeah, I call it How to Train a Monkey. And, you know, you're the monkey or you're the zookeeper. Really, you're both. There's really these very simple, basic needs and things that we have. One of them is activity. We were designed to travel great distances every single day. And if you're not doing that, if you're only, like I use a Fitbit, you know, so if you're only walking 3 miles a day, you're not even meeting the core necessities of your body to function. Like you could walk 15, 20 miles a day. That's what I did when I was in Miami, is I walked about 20, 25 miles every single day, and I felt alive through that. So it, for me, like doing the construction thing, part of it was I hate going to the gym, man. I hate going there. I hate lifting weights. I don't feel motivated about it. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm too damn smart. So let's just go ahead. And instead of going to the gym, let's just take a job that is going to put me in the gym every single day. And that's what I came up with.
Now I've just got a bunch of your videos playing on the side.
Yeah. This one, I mean, this one was a lot of fun. Like I really, this is probably of all of my cinematic shots that I've pulled off, this has probably by far been my favorite.
Now let's say there's somebody watching this who's into, like they want to do this. They're like, all right, I've always had this eye. I've got the camera. I've got these things. How do I go from, you know, wanting to be someone who's creating these movies, creating clips, to someone who's actually doing it? I mean, obviously the first step is to go do. So we get that all the time.
Yeah.
Like, how do you really get out of your own way though? And that's not just, all right, go do and hit record. Like, no, like have an idea. And then what do you want to see? Do you think of what do you want to see at the end? Like in your head, you're like, all right, in the end, it's a commercial or it's a real estate clip. And then you go and make that happen. Or do you just say, I want to look and capture the essence of this couple or this building or whatever.
Yeah. On this one, Eric, he had sort of this very classic feel to him. So after I initially met him, I felt like I wanted to throw out like this, like 70s sort of Bronx vibe, you know, like inner city, like that classic shot with the dark background there in the background.
Yeah.
So I went into it with just an idea of what it was I was trying to capture. That's why I focus on music videos, because if I do the cinema and then I also do every other part of it, it gets too complicated. So it's easier for me to just do music videos as opposed to like worry about acting and talent with these guys. So I'm just telling him like, this is a target field there in the background. We're up on top of the building. I think
target field, what is it?
That's in Minneapolis.
My head.
Target. That's where the Twins play. The Minnesota Twins play at that stadium. So, yeah, I try to go into it with what it is that I want to try to capture, and then I really focus on that. So, my advice to somebody who's interested in and getting good visuals like this is, it's not easy. I mean, if you want to be able to this shot right here, that the color. Everything that you see there, I would say is probably close to maybe 1,000 hours in camera time.
In that one, this whole clip or that?
I'm saying the skill level required to be able to get to
make
this,
that shot.
Yeah, to get to this level where you can capture images at this level without going to college, I would say plan on about 1,000 hours.
That's awesome.
Unless you're just like something else about you, you're super like naturally creative or something, then that's entirely different. Or if you went to college for, you know, you did like a 4-year program for it. This was actually just when I just had gotten the Mavic 2 Pro. And it was just like, so as an example, I actually used this video. This is the same soundtrack on those two videos. So I just threw some drone footage on there. And then when I was filming, it's the same song. Does that make sense?
Yep.
So I could listen to it while I was filming it and had it kind of there playing in the background so that I could get the right mood and vibe as I'm kind of like swinging through the shots. So this was, I didn't really spend much time on making this super special.
So one of the things I'll do is when I'm looking over, like let's say I want to do a voiceover on something on like a podcast, not a podcast, for like a little clip on YouTube, I will capture all the videos, put them all together. Then I'll watch it. I'll make like little tick marks at certain time points.
Yeah.
And then I'll go back over and start talking and I'll know, all right, at minute, you know, one.
30, yeah.
Yeah. And in 27 seconds, it goes from driving in the Jeep to running with the dogs. So I'll time the speech of what I'm talking about to shift at that point too. You know, from being immersed and, you know, going through the world to immersing in the moment with your loved ones, you know, and bam, the dogs are showing up. And it's like, oh, how does the theme fit that so well? Well, it's planning. You know, it takes intentional planning and scripting it out. Donovan Sharp is amazing at this. You know, he will go through his whole episode and he'll, all right, we're going to talk about this. At this minute, we're going to talk about this. I'm going to call this person to this. We're going to have call-ins at this. He's so professional about it. And for a lot of people who want to go from amateur to pro and they want people to start looking at their stuff and then start sharing their stuff, you've got to do that. You've got to put in that extra effort to make yourself stand out a little bit. You know, somebody who has a drone and is just driving around, this is intentional. Look at them coming across the field. There's a reason you stayed where you stayed. You know, there's a reason that they're in the middle, not the top or the bottom, left or the right. You saw something.
And you know, what's comical about this is every shot that you've seen since we exited the house, it's a 9-year-old flying.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So she did a ton of shots, but she had complete control of the drone. And then we were working through, I was showing her composition, like, oh, okay, do this. And then she was trying it. So this is probably, I probably have an hour worth of footage of her flying. And it's everything that you see was basically her.
That's incredible. I like how, I mean, I don't know if you can see my mouse, but how the light is hitting the top of this, but the shades in the background. So it's giving it that depth. And you guys are sitting right around here.
Yeah, I love what the drone creates. I mean, it does something. We never really see it. It's like sticky little buds, you know? It's like you kind of want to pinch it a little bit, you know? Yep. It's just so beautiful that it's almost hard to really to comprehend.
All right, I'm going to get rid of this. Yeah. It is pretty fucking cool. So when you go through and you see, you know, the different things that people are creating, do you ever have a complex, you know, with other artists or other individuals who are trying to create?
Hold on one second here. I took the coffee pot. There you go.
Dude, you can't steal the caffeine.
Yeah, bring it back.
You're gonna get head chopped off.
Bring my coffee back. Don't be gone too long.
See, you get to put the tough guy voice on because you're on air. Fucking
hurry up, yeah.
Where's my meat?
What was your question that you had? You complex?
Do you have a complex and you see artists trying to emulate others instead of building their own? Like they see success with the drone and then they're trying to copy the drone, or is that something so you support that? You're like, hey, go ahead,
we're monkeys.
Play with it. Yep.
Yeah, we're monkeys who learn through observation. So your only limitation is what you've experienced or observed.
That's cool.
So like the Casey Neistat, I don't know if you're a big YouTube guy. That's where a lot of my camera skills I learned doing tutorials and watching different creators. One of them was Casey Neistat. Huge, just love his program. His early work is better than it was now, but he always wore glasses, right? And so then other YouTube creators started wearing sunglasses, and then it was like, oh, you're just trying to be Casey Neistat. And it's like, no, there's actually a really logical reason why you do it. And it is because if you're watching yourself on a flip screen, what happens is your eyes tend to focus on yourself as opposed to the lens. And if you wear sunglasses, nobody can see where your eyes are at. So it looks like you're looking into the camera, but really you're sort of looking off camera, having a full conversation up here. And you know, like if you had glasses on, you would never be able to see that. So some people kind of made fun of other creators for doing that, when in reality, it actually was a genius idea, and that everybody should do it if you're vlogging personally. So
that is one of the things I hate is like for me to be talking to you, I need to be looking here, but for me to be reading the chat, I've got to be like this, or for me to, you know, bring up those videos, I've got to be looking at the tab and finding out how to share and everything. So now I'm down here doing this when I'm engaged 100% here, but you won't know because you're looking at me. So you're like, what the fuck is Hunter looking at? You know?
So that's why the sunglasses are helpful. It is kind of distant. You know, it's kind of hard to build a connection that way, but it makes such a difference in your ability to pay attention.
Speaking of paying attention.
This is a closed studio. All right.
I love my show. And I love my guests.
I love you, Hunter. You're a great man.
It's been a great, you know, relationship so far. I'm looking forward to when we hit the rocky roads.
What's that going to look like? You're like 5'3", bro.
Hey, a solid 5'3", though. It's not like 5'2 and a half. It's a strong 5'3". Don't you worry about that.
There was one thing I was thinking about yesterday, and you did ask a little bit about the altruism thing, and there was something that happened at the convention last year, and I never really had a chance to talk to anybody about it. And I, I feel like maybe this would be a good chance to see what your thoughts on it are. So one of the speakers, Ed Lattimore, I don't know if you remember, but he had a shellfish reaction.
Yep.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And he went to the ER that night. And they put him on a stretcher and they wheeled him out. And I was just kind of standing there. I was pretty intoxicated. And I was just like, I had this like overwhelming sense, especially from seeing his speech. Like, I was like, this dude is so down to earth, man. Like, I really, really like this guy. He's so genuine and he's like strong and big, but he seems like a sweet little boy. And, you know, so I had watched him wheel out. He went in the ambulance and he left. And I kind of looked around and I realized that like he's like from Atlanta or some Pittsburgh or something, and he's alone here. Like there's nobody else who knows he's here, right? So I took an Uber and I went to the emergency room. I talked to the ambulance drivers, like, where are you guys going? Can I ride in the ambulance? So, like, you can't get in the ambulance, but we're going to the hospital. And I went to the hospital, and luckily. Well, I guess not luckily. I mean, he survived, but he used his real name, just so you know. So I went to the front desk and I was like, I'm here for Ed Lattimore. You know, I'm his publicist. And they're like, what? Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So they actually brought me back into the hospital room with him. I was using my skills of persuasion. And I got back in the hospital room and he was out. You know, like, I don't know if you ever had Benadryl before in the hospital.
Yeah.
But it's like
amazing.
He's got all those crack memes he sends out there, but the Benadryl is the real crack, you know.
That is the best quote. Like, he's gonna love that. I'm gonna be sure he sees that clip. Benadryl is the real crack.
So he wakes up, and you know, I'm just like sitting back in the corner. You know, it's dark. You know, it's like I've been in the hospital. I know what it's like to wake up there. I know what it's like to wake up and be alone. And to be removed and like just feel so isolated. And he woke up and he's kind of like, he's a big dude, you know? And he's like, he looks over, he's like, he's like, what are you doing here, man? I was like, just making sure everything's okay, man. Just like, you're here alone. I just came to keep, you know, make sure you got back to the hotel okay. And he's like, man. Nobody's ever came to the hospital for me before, man. Thank you. And it was that moment for myself when I realized that I've always thought that I'm this terrible, evil person, you know, because I'm so selfish and because I have a lot of negative feedback in society, been a lot of consequences in my life for not following the rules. And I've always been told that I'm this bad person. And it was like, when I was sitting there and I was looking at Ed, I just was like, I felt so connected in that moment. And to be able to make him feel like somebody gave a shit, I guess. It was another part of the catalyst. I think, I don't even know what to say after that, man. I don't even know where I'm going with it, but.
I will say this. You've obviously changed other people's perception of you. You may still have this little complex as to who you are and what it is you're doing, but Ed, he gave a shout out. You know, he was like, look, and he named you by name. You know, he's talking about, hey, this guy came out, you know, Justin came and he stayed with me at the hospital and he talked about this. I don't know if he said it on stage or if it was just us sitting around a table, but he was like, yeah. He's like, he just stayed there. He's like, I don't, like, if that's what this community is, he's like, I'll be part of this forever. And he gave this whole like breakdown as to what you did. And I was like, yeah, makes sense. That's Justin. Like, I'm surprised he wasn't fucking with you though. I mean,
I still did.
But it's one of those, when I heard that story, I was like, of course, you know, but, and it plays to something too. When we talk about alcohol use, we talk about doing things like that, you know, I've shared, you know, it's been a rough relationship.
Yeah.
But we broke up, not even recently, a while ago we broke up. And we're not talking right now. But I had that thought. There was one morning I woke up and like I had blacked out. It was an awesome party. We had a great time. But like I just went overboard as I always do, put myself to bed, whatever. And I was like, what if my kid broke their arm that night? you know, what if that night my wife, you know, something, what if somebody tried robbing us that night? I'm dead. I'm literally dead to the world. I can't take care of my children. I can't take care of my wife. They're in bed, they're sleeping. But what if that's the night the fire happens? What if that's the night that the bad thing happens? You know, what if you were so knocked out when he was taken away, like you were just so incapable of even coherent sentences that you couldn't go with him? Ed wakes up alone again. Ed never has that renewed sense of faith in humanity again. And that's kind of the final point that I was like, I can't do this because I don't want a preventable pain, preventable death, preventable loss to ever happen because I decided I want to drink this liquid because it makes me feel cool, you know, because I keep chasing that dragon of the next one, I'll feel better. The next one, I'll feel better. The next one, I'll feel even better. And then you're just like knocked out on the floor. I don't want that in my life. And I think, you know, as you being there for Ed, you know, it's another example of what if you'd gone too far and that moment never happened? It doesn't happen for you. It doesn't happen for him. How many people in the world, it never happened because they couldn't stop. They couldn't experience the goodness of the world. They couldn't experience the appreciation of self. You know, you may not view yourself to be something great, but in Ed's eyes, you're the guy who fucking showed up when nobody in his life ever has. That's wild.
So you broke up with alcohol?
Yeah, dude, I haven't had a drink in a while.
How long?
I don't know. Okay. I made it a while, and then my sister had the baby. We had like some champagne, and then not much since then. It was like a bottle in a very long time, like a month.
Yeah, I don't know why it's like a roller coaster for me, where it just starts off with a couple, and then it's like 3 months later. And, you know, I'm like drinking when I get home, drinking, you know, and it's like this weekend, I think it was Saturday. I went out to a bar and I went to go film with my drone and I was like, oh, I'm just going to stop and have a drink. And I got drunk and it was like, I can't even drive. How am I going to fly my fucking plane? Like, this is ridiculous. Like, I'm breaking away from things that I love. Like, I've always wanted to be a pilot. That is something that, you know, I took my FAA exam last week and I passed it. And it was like, I think I spent maybe 2 hours, 2.5 hours total, like reading on like a 500 page manual. And just breezing through it. And I passed it. And it was like, as I was walking out, I was like, when I was 19, instead of being a troublemaker and chasing Poonanny, I should have been in the Air Force flying fighter jets, you know?
Look at that photo behind you.
Yeah, that's probably one of my favorite photos right there. That's the F-35 JSF there. And I have the mental capacity and the wherewithal to, and the vision, everything necessary to be able to do that. Except I decided to, you know, smoke pot and listen to Dr. Dre, the Chronic, instead of doing something, you know. Now it's funny because it's always good hindsight. I can always look back and say I could have done something so much different with my life, but I wouldn't be me today. And obviously I can't go back and change that. But just that knowledge of knowing that I could have done anything I wanted to in this world, but I didn't have the space for it because I was getting stoned, I was getting drunk. So congratulations to you for getting sober and making an effort. I use the breaking up analogy because it really is like a relationship gone bad.
I'm the same way. That is the best way to look at it. It's a relationship. You know, it is like hard and fucking terrible and there's complex. And it's funny though, it's because you also romanticize it. Like you see that woman who's like so bad for you, but in your head, you'd be like, it could be so good. God, and like when you say you want to stop for a drink, you're like, I'm going to stop and there's going to be somebody there. We're going to have a great time, smiles, few beers, you know, maybe a sandwich or like something. And then I'm going to go and be loose and relaxed and create. That's not how it is for us.
No.
It's fucking, you go in there and you're like, it's zero or it's 10. There is no three. That is I've tried. I'm 32. I'm done trying. Like I either accept like, hey, it's going to be a wild night, or like, hey, it's, I'm going to be good to go. And, you know, I'm going to do something else.
So I made the decision on, I think the first day was Sunday, where I was just like, and I know initially I really do have to kind of isolate myself and just be like, I'm not going out, I'm not doing fucking dinners. I'm not going to really socialize. I'm going to focus on, you know, what it is that I need to focus on right now and not going there, because I already feel better. It's, so what day is today? Wednesday. We're like day three in. And it was funny because, you know, Jake, my foreman on my crew, Monday, he's like, how was the weekend? I was like, I spent $100 on liquor and I'm sick of drinking. And he's like, man, I'm so glad I don't drink. Good for you. And so there is support out there, especially if a guy is watching us right now and he's like, he's hearing some of our stories or kind of feeling or relating to it. The whole concept of breaking up with alcohol for me was I wrote it a love letter, and I was like, listen, baby, like, man, I love how you make me feel. Like I fantasize about you. I think about you. And when I get there, I never get enough. And then I wake up in the morning and I can't find my pants and I can't find. And I'm like, you know, I mean, if you're like me, I have an alter ego. We call him drunk. I call him drunk Justin. That first drink, as soon as I put it in my hand, he's like, get another one. Come on, man.
Let's go.
Let's slam it. And he's back there. He's like, I want control. It's time for the party to start. You know,
it's like, you know, if you could see like an image in your head, it's like, there's like you sitting there squared away. There's like a drone behind you, you know, you're like driving your ship. And then you like have that sip and it's like, poof, and some dude comes on with his hat backwards, yeah. Fucking grabs him, yeah. Like, let's go.
Let's get some pussy. Let's chase some girls tonight. Let's, you know. But that's why I think for me was the idea of breaking up with alcohol. I was admitting that I was still in love with her, right? That there will always be that fantasy and idealization there for me, and that I will always be weak and vulnerable. And I think in that post, it was on Facebook, and it was October 16th, I think, last year when I put it up there. And it was just basically, I know that we're going to fuck around again. I know I'm going to wake up in the morning and you're going to be laying there with me. And I just want you to know you can't stay. Like, it's just a one night stand and I need you to leave immediately.
See you in a month. I'll see you whenever, but it's not going to be tomorrow. It's not going to be today, but I'll see you. I know I'll see you again. And I can see myself in that boat. I mean, it's one of those, I don't know. It's right now, it's a good thing. You know, I don't have any worries, you know, saving money. I'm wicked productive. You know, I'm knocking a lot of shit out, cause I'm not tired at all. Like, waking up this morning, if I was hungover, I'd be like, all right, man, like, let's just talk. Like, I wouldn't have the creative juices. You know, we wouldn't be able to tap into the things we're tapping into. So there's always that. But then there's like those moments where you're like, I just want to sit and like let loose. Like, let's just go nuts. And I don't know if that's rationalization or if that's just, you know, being able to say the thing a lot of people don't talk about. People are like, oh, no, you've got to be perfectly stoic 24/7. Like, nah, come on. We're human beings. We're fucking insane.
Well, I think when we, we've got this huge reward center, and it's tied to, like, we feel like just because we did something good that we deserve a treat, a reward for it, you know, and alcohol is sort of becomes that treat, you know? So it's like anything I do that is good, I immediately want to celebrate, and the celebration turns into a shitty fucking party really quickly. You know, like you said, it's the money. I mean, for me, it's a financial thing. That's the real motivator outside of feeling like shit. It's also like, I don't want to destroy my liver, but also it's like, I'm spending, you know, X amount of dollars every year on it. And it's not doing me any good. You know, I don't feel like I'm doing better as a result of it. So my bad. Did you get double feedback there?
No.
Okay, good. I was gonna send you a link, but I don't think I have it up here yet. For what? And this is a big thing too, Hunter. And I think it's important that you understand that you're doing something. You know, I mean, some people say, "Oh, he's doing the Lord's work." But definitely, I mean, like from a younger guy who's considerably younger than me, you know, in a different space and time, you had a huge effect on me. And even though I'm not looking at the camera, I'll let you talk for a second here, because I'm going to send you this link. I'm going to send you this picture that I drew of you at the convention last year. So
what are you sending it through?
I was going to send it through Facebook.
I think you showed me your journal. You had going through each of the guys, and then you had like one sentence or one quote from each. And in that, it reminded you of the entirety of what it was they were talking about. Is that correct? I think we had that conversation. I might be making that up.
Well, let me just get logged in real quick and I can send it to you and then you can open it. Do you have your Facebook chat open still?
Yeah. I was about to wrap this up, but now I have to see this photo.
I apologize to your viewers here. I know they're looking for something. I hate not paying attention, but I feel like I have to send this to you.
So one of the things recently that I'm looking forward to doing, we just announced the next live meetup for the Fraternity of Excellence.
Yeah.
And we've got 21Con at the end of this month. So this October, we got that going on. And then in February, we'll be doing our live meetup. And it's one of those things where I leave those things like I took like six fucking like Four Locos to the head. I'm just like totally like in my element, totally jacked up with the men. I mean, it's incredible.
There is something about a fraternity. I mean, there's a reason why we do it in college. There's a reason why it's part of our masculine development is because it centers us in, you know, it grounds us. It makes us feel connected to something bigger. And especially if you have shared interests and values. And when I left the convention last year, and this is just a quick sidebar on that. I made a decision when I left, I was going to be there for 2 weeks to not have sex. I was not going to allow myself to release in any fashion. And those 2 weeks that I spent there, when I came back, and I remember landing back in the Twin Cities, like the video I shot of leaving Miami International Airport was possibly the most stable footage I had ever shot. And I would just say that if anybody's on the fence about maybe joining the Fraternity of Excellence or thinking about going to 21 convention, that it is absolutely worth it to do it. So you're going to walk away like, I don't even know. It's like steroids, man.
I found your drawing. And I completely agree, by the way. Dude, it's nuts. So this is what you drew while I was speaking.
Yep. What if I turn the wheel, the fire reflecting manhood? And, you know, I felt like the base of your speech was, you know, for me, because I was just coloring these as we were talking, or as you were talking. And this was sort of my rendition of what my subconscious was hearing and seeing. And then this is something I can look at this and I'll remember your speech forever because I essentially colored it while you were talking. So
good. I think it's pretty cool how an image, you know, tells a story. You know, they say a picture's worth 1,000 words. Well, that has at least, you know, 43 of those words have to be the word fuck. I'm pretty
positive. I didn't include that in there. That's not what I was hearing. You know, it's like, yeah. And it's funny is because if you look at that picture, pull it up there again. If you were to just like not having a conversation with me, if you were just looking at this picture right now, how old would you say the artist was who drew that picture?
Young.
Yeah. Think about that. That there's a somewhere inside of me, there is a kindergartner waiting to get out.
I often say that men, one of the things we have to hang on to is that childlike state of wonder and passion and curiosity. Yeah. And that's what makes men, men. That's why it's always dad that'll run and jump into the river or dad that'll grab you and run through the mud and jump into it. why is it dad that's doing the kids thing with the kids? Because dad still has that.
Because dad's still a little boy. Yeah.
I think all men have that. You know, we all grow up to be men. We have responsibilities. We have our duties. You know, that's what men do. We carry that burden. It's the burden of performance that'll always be on us. But being able to carry that burden while enjoying the ride, all of us still have that. You'll see, you know, the happiest men, they're the ones that'll do the crazy shit. They'll do the shit that they did as kids. They'll climb, they'll jump, they'll explore, they'll wonder, they're curious. You know, that's what boys and young men naturally are. And the best of adult men keep that. They stay tapped into that energy. And that's what keeps them going and keeps them smiling. And that's why on Twitter, you know, eventually when I start going more on Facebook, you'll see I am always like, I don't give a shit. I'm smiling. I'm having a good time. Like it's like a kid. Like really, there's a lot of worries in the world, but they're not my worries. I've got my happy little bubble and I'm in that. I'm doing my thing. And if you don't like it, go away. If you do like it, come on in. It's a great place.
Playfulness is the greatest quality, even especially in a relationship, or even if you're looking at getting into a relationship. I mean, especially if you can embody those ideals, because when you look at, if you look at women, for instance, like they still really feel like the white picket fence, the dream, but they really feel that first feeling. Do you remember your first girlfriend? And you'd see her at school and you'd run and hide. She's still a little girl. She'll always be that little girl. She'll always remember that first kiss or like playing on the playground and holding you down, which that was my experience. Girls always, when I was younger, they always attacked me and held me down. Now I know why. It's because I'm dashing and daring. But at the time, at the time I'd go home and be like, dad, so-and-so held me down today and put their dress over my face. And my dad would be like, well, when you get older, you're going to wish it was still happening.
Better than getting teabagged.
Oh God. How did you go there? I'm visual. I'm just saying, man.
You got to look at the alternative.
Oh God, that hurt. Oh,
no, I was in the Navy. You know how it goes.
I guess. Yeah. I guess the fraternization is part of it, right? Anything else you want to cover? Or
no, I was going to say, let's wrap this one up.
Awesome.
So having you on, like I said, people aren't privy to our private conversations. And that's why I really wanted to bring you out to the world and kind of have people understand. Like, I've been talking to this guy, so I might as well do it live with people watching.
We'll see what they think, you know.
If there was anywhere you'd want to send people, if they wanted to come check out your work, your photography, your insights on maybe ways they could improve or areas they're stuck at, where could they find you? Where would be the best way for you to pay attention to them?
Facebook. I will say that I don't accept any friend requests from guys. You have to be hot. You can still follow me there. But other than that, it's my feed is pretty much all women and close friends. So for me, the big thing for me is I want to support creators like you. I'm interested in helping you put yourself out there. I've already sort of had my go. I've made my money. I'm more interested in helping other people. So if people are interested in finding me, definitely you want to go do the fishbowl. You know, if you want to go fishbowl and look in to see, you know, like look inside there and see what it looks like inside my life, you can definitely go there and check it out. You can always message me. I'm accessible. You know, so people like you, you send me messages, I answer pretty quickly. But really I'm here to support young fathers and help them find their way. So
that's really cool, man. I appreciate you coming on.
Thanks.
Thank you for your time. For everybody that tuned in, thanks again for supporting what it is I'm doing and starting this this hump day outright. So next time I see you, it'll be Friday. So Friday morning, I've got Big Tex. We're going to be talking about baseball. I'll see you then.